For decades, the media has treated the Saudi Arabian woman as the poster child for female oppression. But recent changes in the kingdom are challenging that image. In 2011, the late King Abdullah, a reformer, granted women the right to vote. 2 years later, Saudi women were given seats on the Shura Council, or the Saudi Parliament. Just last December, women voted for the first time and were allowed to join their local city councils. And the number of employed Saudi women has increased by 48% since 2010. UC Berkeley journalism professor Cynthia Gorney was intrigued by this changing society, so she visited Saudi Arabia to spend time with the women there. She wrote an article for National Geographic titled "The Changing Face of Saudi Women." Gorney joined me in studio, and I asked her what the women had to say.
Before I ever became interested in this project, I, who make a living talking to people that I don't agree with and trying to learn about things that I don't understand that are out of my experience, had the same kind of blanket prejudices about Saudi Arabia as many of my very well-educated and internationally sophisticated friends, which was to say it outraged me. The gender relations outraged me. And I would say, how is it, a very familiar line for all of us, how is it that the U.S. can have friendly relations with a country that enslaves its entire female population? How is it that we could do what we did with South Africa, which is to say, you can't do this. This is not internationally acceptable, and we will cut off all economic ties with you, but not do that with Saudi Arabia. That was my attitude. And you and I could talk for hours about that question, but the first thing that I had to learn when I finally did begin to read about Saudi and arrive was that my job was to listen to women, just listen to women. And the first, I must have had 300 long conversations in the 2 months that I spent in Saudi Arabia. And the first 20 of them that you have were not exactly to a woman, but almost to a woman. Women are telling me, you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You people don't understand who we are and what we want and how we think and why we live this way, and you're always judging us, and we're sick of it. We're over it. The first 19 of those conversations that you have, you really sober up in any notion you might have had about lecturing these women.
And this is you, the person actually coming to listen.
Absolutely.
And you're getting this.
And I'm not going to say people were hostile to me at all. Once they saw that I was genuinely there to listen and not lecture them, they could not have been more warm, inviting, and friendly. I mean, people just come to my house, come to this place, come to that place, let's talk. And the women would say to me that their chief complaint about the way that outsiders look at them is that we obsess on the wrong things. We obsess, the Saudi women would tell me, on their inability to, for example, go swimming in a swimming pool with men.
Or driving? Did that come up a lot?
Oh,
because that is the issue.
Of course. Well, one of the ways I found that I would bond with Saudi women was by saying fairly quickly, I promise you, this is not another driving story. And they would say, okay, great, let's talk. Now, there are plenty of Saudi women who believe that the refusal to issue driver's licenses to women is stupid. We don't understand that there are two things that irritates the vast majority of Saudis about the outside's obsession with their driving restrictions. One is that we equate driving with independence in a way that we, especially in California, equate drive. I mean, when I was 16 and got my driver's license, it meant I was free. For Saudis, that is not necessarily the case. Driving is a pain no matter who's doing it in Saudi Arabia. The roads are awful. The city traffic is horrific. And many Saudi women I talked to were really irritated and insulted that we would imagine that their notion of freedom is tied up in whether they can get behind the wheel of their own car. So number one is that you don't understand why we need to drive. Mm. We need to drive because it's very expensive for us to hire a driver, because it's a pain for us to get to work if we cannot, because et cetera, et cetera.
Not because of freedom.
not because of freedom. We have, you misunderstand what freedom is, they would say. You think freedom is the ability to jump in a swimming pool with a guy and drive your car and be in the same shopping mall store with a guy. We don't think that's it. So that's part of it.
And then that comfort aspect, would that come in here as well? That I'm comfortable.
Yes.
I am being driven everywhere.
Yes. And then a lot of women would say to me, I certainly met a number of women who were enormously irritated that they could not drive. And I met women who were involved in the driving protests who felt that this was a deep offense and that the only way to keep going was protesting. But I met a lot more women, I will say, just numerically, who, while not angry at the protesting women, felt that the protesting women needed to shut up because what they were doing was counterproductive and they were setting off the most conservative elements of Saudi society, and they had turned this act of transportation into a much larger matter that had to do with becoming Western, forgetting who we are as Saudis. And once again, the Saudi prescription, this is another thing that I hadn't understood, and I think a lot of my friends had not understood. The Saudi rules and cultural practices about women not driving are not primarily, at least in my experience, based in the idea that women are incapable of driving a car. They are based in the idea that women would be unsafe because, once again, if women and men are allowed to mingle in the open, great harm will come to women because, fundamentally, women radiate powerful sexuality and men are uncontrollable. And that is kind of the guiding principle of many levels of Saudi organization. So I would say that at the class level that I was talking to, educated people, the majority speaking English, not heavy protesters, aggravated with many aspects of Saudi society, but equally aggravated in some ways with American misconceptions of Saudi society, they would say, let it go. Let us do this. It's going to take some time. We are going to be driving. It may not happen next year. It may not happen then in the next 5 years. We are going to be driving, and you all need to shut up about it.
What do you want people here in the United States to really, really get out of your article at the end of the day?
I would like the next time one of us here on the streets of the Bay Area sees a woman who happens to be wearing an abaya and niqab, I would like you not to recoil or not to think, what an oppressed woman, but to make it disappear and to see the woman who's inside and try somehow to listen to her and do that with the entire nation of Saudi women who are, they have a million voices. To say that they have a thing to tell us is as condescending as saying Americans, women, have a thing to tell us. We come in every imaginable form and point of view. But so do Saudi women, and I think the thing that angers them overall most is the notion that we feel sorry for them or that we understand in a way that they do not that they're oppressed. Mm. So getting loose of those kinds of preconceptions would be the main thing I would hope my piece could do.